Welcome to the third Supercoach Coach podcast for preseason 2021. I'm back, Marcus, and I'm joined again by FB Donkey. Welcome back, mate.
G'day, mate. What was the feedback from people being able to see us for a change?
I haven't really shouted about it too much, so I'm guessing most of the listeners have just caught us on the podcast feeds. I think there's about less than 100 views on YouTube at the moment. Just so you know, guys, we're now on YouTube as well. You can obviously get to that link via Supercoach Coach. It's brand new. We tried it on a whim. I've cut it together. I'm not a video editing expert. We're still optimizing for audio. I think the feedback from you, Mark, is a bit choppy.
A little bit choppy. We should probably say you need to go and smash that like button. That's what people say on YouTube, yeah, isn't it?
Like and subscribe. Oh, actually, I'm not wearing a hat at the moment. Let me put on my merchandise. I'm back home, back in Melbourne. Patreon supporters, Supercoach hat. I've got my beer in a nice stubby holder here for anybody watching on video. These are the high quality effects you get if you're tuning in. No, it's good though. It's been really nice to see your face while we've been doing this. I think even that's just made a difference. Being able to see each other's reactions actually been nice, because we record on audio, but we've never really had video on. So yeah, it's actually nice.
I can actually signal you. You can read my body language.
You were right. There's a lot more eye rolls.
Can you imagine like working with me? Because I do that a lot. We should probably apologize to the listeners too about the audio quality from the last couple of episodes. Yeah. Like you said, you are home now. We have got the proper equipment set up and we are good to go.
We were just so keen to record and I was trapped in Sydney, guys. So apologies. Even editing it was a painful experience. So I very much appreciate everyone gritting their teeth through that and getting through it. The advice hopefully was worth it. We've had some decent feedback. Yeah, so crystal clear to your ears until Mark goes traveling and we have sketchy Wi-Fi to deal with. So we'll see how we go.
And the big news, mate, just before we get into the proper show, the big news, the Marshall and Bruce both getting injured after we did the Ruck show. That threw a spanner in the works.
Yep, and I think a few hours before this, Wayne Millera out for 6 weeks with a bum knee. A lot of injuries rolling in this preseason. Not sure if that's because I'm not reading the same amount of football news and the ones I read tend to be about injuries. There have been some games actually held, and not official preseason games, but we've been reading a few news pieces on, I think Geelong played Collingwood, so there's little scratch matches happening here and there. Who did you play, Mark? Who did Bombers?
Carlton. They got up, but the scores don't really matter at the moment. It's more just, I guess what we're looking for is what roles our players are playing in these games and what time the rookies are getting and maybe what roles they're playing as well.
I know some people pretty excited about Connor Downey after the Hawthorn scratch match. Now looking like he might firm for some game time. So those are definitely things to keep your eye out on. But we won't go in detail with a review of that yet. We generally cover off the preseason games in our final show. I really look at who's shown good form across that period. So we'll be considering both these scratch matches. And next week there's games too. Geelong actually plays Essendon. I'm nicking across the border to South Australia for a mini holiday. It's a long weekend, I think Labor Day Monday. So I'll see how much football I get to. I might have to be playing catch up. But yeah, Geelong playing Essendon down at GMHBA. And I think we kick off with Carlton St Kilda on the Thursday night at Marvel Stadium, which is just around the corner for me. So I might nick down there.
It's all coming quickly. We're almost ready. We should start getting our teams together, mate.
Yeah, less than 20 days now, I think. Not long to go. This week, we're going to talk about the midfielders. So we're not going to cover the guys that we already covered in the top picked section, but we're going to look at everybody else above 10% of teams at the moment. And depending how we go on timing, we might go a bit more. Otherwise, we'll leave the rest for the Patreon bonus show. All right. Before we get going, patreon.com/supercoachcoach. That's where you can go for the bonus material. And if you want to support us, We're going to be making an attempt to allocate more time for that, including for this week's bonus show. Going to be harder on our stops mark for the main show, unfortunately, for the primary listeners. But we've got to make sure we dedicate the right amount of time to give some bonus content out. So make sure you jump on there if you're keen to support us. Like I mentioned, and if you're watching the video, great hat. This one's actually a bit faded because I sprayed some bleach on it. So it's normally all black. Mine's a bit red.
I was wondering about the color.
And sweet stubby holder to keep your beer nice and chilly. That for our higher tier supporters. Otherwise, if you want to get involved in our leagues, you can sign up on supercoachcoach.com.au for our ranked leagues. I'll be sending out unranked league codes via our social media channels pretty soon. Our Supercoach Coach group is, of course, available via the podcast page as well. And yeah, we'll leave that there for the plugs. We're going to start with a guy who's picked in 18.5% of teams, Mark, who plays for Essendon as a value midfielder for the first guy we're going to talk about in the midfield show. Dyson Heppel at 319,000. So a step ladder player. He's never really reached heights where you'd consider him a midfield keeper. So interesting to see him in such a large percent of teams, potentially reflective of the fact that a lot of us are still a bit worried about the rookies and where they're going to show up. I know on Twitter there's quite a lot of chat on that. Struggled with injuries in recent years, Mark. Yes. 319,000, though, is a pretty good price point for him. Maybe touch above what we'd like to pay, 20-30K, but not enough to be ruling him out. If he can average 100-105 from here, is that good enough to be picking Dyson?
I don't think so, really. I think that's a really trappy sort of zone. You want him to spike a really big score, which he's shown in the past that he can post those 160 scores. So you want him to spike one, make 100, 200K and get out of him, I think. Like you said, he's never posted premium midfield numbers before. I think 106 or so is his highest average ever. I doubt that he's going to be able to lift that average into the 110, 120 mark playing off half back. If he was available as a defender at that price, I think that you'd really strongly consider him. But available as a pure midfielder, when his game is probably more of a dream team game than a Supercoach game in previous years, he hasn't really come across my team as someone that's likely to be in there. You think of previous seasons, looking at players like Libba with a similar price. Libba did have actual premium scoring history, like the 110 pluses before. And so maybe potentially a more realistic gamble there. I don't think that Heppel's quite in that category personally. And I think based on the games we've seen so far, the rookies do look like they'll probably turn up.
106 was his Supercoach average in his fourth year. And at that stage, looked like he could go on with it, but has really petered out since. And Mark, when you refer to his dream team versus Supercoach ratio, first season, 83.4 in DT, 83.4 in SC. 2012, he's averaged actually higher, 85.3 versus 84.2 in SC. 95, 91.1, 106.9, 106.3. It took until his fifth year for him to outscore his dream team points with Supercoach points. And that's generally pretty rare. And it speaks to the fact that his game style, when he does get the ball, tends to be shorter kicks or handballs. Even though he's fine in the contest, he's not really the Jack Viney, the Tom Liberatore types that you referenced before, where they get so much of that that they can really overwhelm with a couple of big games. Yeah, I very much agree with you, Mark, but I don't mind him for a plan C if the right players don't show up. But at this stage, somebody that I'm probably leaving for a backup plan rather than a primary plan. Jack Steele's a really interesting one. The next guy we're going to talk about in 16.3% of teams. Absolutely massive season last year. Now, I'm struggling a little bit with Jack because I probably underestimated him throughout 2020. And on that basis, I probably will continue to have a similar level of apprehension with him going into 2021. do I have confidence in his ability to transfer that from a 16-minute a quarter game to a 20-minute quarter game? Do I want to buy a guy like that at a high? Do I see him potentially averaging 120 plus and therefore showing a little bit of value, or is this where I see his ceiling? I have seen a lot of chatter about him off the back of last year and just how strongly he came home. It really probably am doubting whether or not my instincts are incorrect on this one, but just the danger signs of picking a guy at a high mark. Do you think Steele's a guy you might take that risk with?
I think you've outlined that pretty well. He's averaged 122. Is he likely to go above 122? You'd say that there's some chance that he could do that, but it's probably in the sort of 10% range, which means that there's 90% chance that he does the same or worse, which to me means that you're probably overpaying for him a bit. Do I expect him to continue scoring really well? To be honest, I do. I think he has been building to this for a few seasons. It's just that 122 is very high, and it's very rare that people break out to that 122 and then are able to hold it. It's the super elite of the competition that are able to do that. Not totally convinced Jack Steele is part of that. But given that his upside is probably not much compared to previous scoring, his durability's like it's all right, but it's not ridiculously good. I think that it's just too big a gamble. There's not a lot of reason to take that risk unless you're picking him as your Neil alternative, basically.
I know there are quite a lot of people who got onto him last year and therefore would potentially hold that level of confidence, but I'm going to be tempted by some of the other options with similar upside potential as well. In the midfield, there are a few players that, present that. And Josh Kelly is a guy who's at 615K, Marcus Bontempelli, 620K. Not to say that as a pick, that they may be better selections for 2021, but certainly in terms of that potential upside, they're guys who have potentially shinier skills to be able to leverage off to break out into that 120, 125 plus bracket. Tim Taranto is a guy that's potentially shown that before, Mark, and last year had a stinker of the season, as did GWS midfielders in general. 453,000 in 15.3% of teams. He is certainly making the Twitter rounds at the moment. We got a lot of questions about him, and some saying surely he's a lock status. Was a number two draft pick, insanely skilled. You probably even argue that in GWS, he quickly proved himself and he moved into that midfield really quickly considering how stacked it was. So I think he's rated fairly highly internally as well, to the extent that you had even Cornelio types pushing up forward sometimes, so that him as a young gun was already getting that midfield time. A heap of potential there. I think we talked about him in either the Patreon or just referenced that we'd have to talk about him, and you were already getting pretty excited about Taranto, Mark. So I'm guessing we're going to hear a pretty good sales pitch coming up.
So I think the lock status is maybe going that little bit too far. But at 453,000, I guess he hasn't done it before, so that's why he's not a lock. If he had posted an average of 110 plus previously, I think that's an absolute lock given his profile and the discount that you're getting on him. As you've said, he has seemed to get the midfield minutes in that GWS side. There's probably some concerns that he is capable of playing other roles, like he could play a bit up forward. You've got Tom Green, who is coming into his second season and look like he might take a bit more midfield time away from Taranto potentially. So there is some role questions around him. If I'm hearing really positive news on his body and seeing him dominate even half a game in the preseason, he will definitely make my side. There's a very good chance I start him. He looks like a genuine premium midfielder, and he's only 450,000. So I reckon this season, when a lot of the midfielders are really overpriced, that's just a really good reason to pick him, because he can close that gap. One of the 650K guys could come down to 550, and he could go from 450 to 550, and you're saving $200,000 and getting similar scoring for a decent chunk of the year. Not 100% locked in, but once you put him in, it's really hard to take him out because of his price. Like you're looking at 150,000 to replace him, which you have to find from somewhere. What about you?
Yeah, I understand the excitement based on his potential and his skill level, but it's still like, it's a scary price range, right? 450 is generally where the danger signs flash. We've had success with these types of picks in the forward line, but in the midfield, a guy who's only done 102.4 before in this third season. So big punt. We've talked about there being congestion in the GWS midfield. You've still got Cornelio who's going to try and prove himself again this year. You've got Kelly who will probably still think that last year wasn't the best. There's a lot of hungry players there.
They've drafted a couple of new mids as well.
Yeah, and if GWS aren't a top four team, the equation gets a lot harder to have multiple top scoring midfielders. And at 450, you really want him to be pretty close to the top eight. It's enough value to say, all right, if you're not a top eight midfielder, I'll stomach the gap in points. But you'd be looking still for 115 plus, and that's
110 plus, I think. I think you could even take 105. Like, that would be a bearable result, but
we're saying no to Heppel at potentially a 105.
That's his upside, though. If you're seeing Taranto's downside at 105 and Heppel's upside at 105, that's very different calculations.
Yeah. Look, who are the other players in his draft class that have gotten close to that level of scoring? Andrew McGlar, Hugh McCluggage, Ben Ainsworth. I'm just bringing up these names as a point of comparison. I guess Jai Simkin in that draft class got some big numbers last year. But you're still talking to get to those sorts of numbers, one of the first in his draft class to break out, and he's number two. He can do that. It's just, it's an aggressive breakout. Even though this will be his fifth year, it's still taking a rather large part. But I'll look keenly at the preseason game. If he shows a heap, I think it'll be hard to say no. But if he just has a solid showing, I don't know how sold I am that I'd be able to take a punt off, let's say, like 100. If he has a 140 and it looks like he's about to take the competition by the scruff of the neck, that's something else. But on talent alone, I don't know if I'll be able to stomach 450. He's almost the type of player that I'd prefer trade into after round two before his first price movement and concede that I've made an error in not picking him up rather than potentially starting him from the get-go. So that's probably where my head's with Taranto at the moment. Next player, more mid prices, Mark. It's a three out of four to start the show. Jackson Hatley. For Adelaide, 15% of teams, 310,000. Didn't get enough time at GWS, gone to spread his wings. I mean, it's hard to see myself picking Hatley over Heppel, to be honest. And I'm not the biggest fan of the Heppel pick. But I haven't been tracking Hatley very closely either. What do you reckon, Mark? 15% of teams, is he overrated or underrated?
I'm going to sit on the fence and say that's about appropriately rated, 15% of teams. Because there's some upside there. The price is not horrible. It's probably just that weird price like we were talking about with Heppel where if it was 250, you'd be like, yes, let's get on this guy. Like, he's mature ager. He's ready to take a huge new role in the Crows midfield. And he's shown some good stuff in the preseason. You could capitalize on that. But once you're paying over 300,000, I think you're really looking for keepers. I think that's been the lesson that we've made that mistake over and over. And it's just, if you're paying more than 300,000, you really want to be finding a keeper in that position. And to do it as a midfielder is extremely difficult because you've got to get up to that 110 mark. Jackson Hatley may have a really good season, average between 100 and 105, and turn out to be a really meh pick that really doesn't advance your season a lot. Probably a no from me, mate.
Agree, Mark. Let's move on to some rolled gold then. A guy that's injury prone, but upside is competition best almost. Nat Fyfe, 14.8% of teams. Will you go there again is the question. For me, honestly, I think it's been no for at least a year or two now. Just the injury history is not worth his upside at this stage of his career for me. So love the guy, but I'll be looking for some young talent instead. What do you reckon, Mark? Is that foolish?
No, I think it's fair. A few reasons why it's fair. One is, like you said, the injury history. He's never played 22 games in a season and has often played 15-ish. And he's just likely to get injured every single season just because of the way he plays and isn't able to necessarily play through those injuries like a Danger or Dusty does. Does he have upside at the price? Absolutely. He's probably one that didn't go completely nuts last year with the limited quarter times. He has averaged 120 plus on three occasions. So the upside is definitely there. And he's going to post some big scores. Like, he's definitely going to go on a run at some stage. If he was available as a forward, I'd probably pick him. But with Fremantle, they've got a lot of young, really good midfielders, and I think they're going to want to give them some time, and that is going to come at Fife's expense because Fife is so unbelievable playing up forward. Will he have a good year? Probably. Will he average more than what he's priced? Probably. And you probably can't say that about a lot of midfielders. It's just that injury history and potential role just makes it a bit tricky for me. Yeah, I love having him in my team, but he's not hasn't been in so far this preseason.
Still not yet 30. Yeah, not over the hill yet, but you're taking a punt whether or not he has a free injury run. And if so, you may be very happy. Definitely wouldn't begrudge anybody picking him, but I don't think either of us will be likely to start him based on those reviews. Next guy, value stakes again. Maybe we'll just have a value midfield mark. Ben Cunnington, 439,800 in 13.7% of teams. Now, he's a particularly risky one because he hasn't really managed super premium numbers for an entire season, Ben Cunnington. Again, he's not over the hill, even though it seems like he's been around a lot. He's still 29. For a midfielder, that can still be very prolific years from a Supercoach standpoint. Lower back injury absolutely crippled his year last year. 102 was his prior season average in 2019, but he had a really strong start to the year. So at one stage, I think he was averaging 115, 120 for the first 13 rounds, 14 rounds or so. Tailed off in the second half, and that's why I say he hasn't managed it for the whole season. But he has shown an ability to post ultra-premium numbers for at least an extended patch. So not completely out of the realms of possibility that he takes an extra step this year. But an interesting one. It's certainly higher percentage stats than I'd be anticipating for Ben Cunnington.
So I wonder if he was 330, would you be picking him?
I'd pick him over Heppel for sure, yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, 430 doesn't interest me at all. Like, I see him as maybe having some big games and getting up there in price at some stage, but he seems like he'll average 100, 105 at best, and that's just not going to cut it. If he averages above 105, which is it's possible, it could turn out to be a good pick, but what are the percentage chances of that happening? It seems like sub 10%, so maybe less than 5% of that actually happening in a Roos side that might struggle a bit. Has already had a concussion in the preseason. Yeah. Just not even in calculations for me.
Yeah. I think another thing to note too, with how Supercoach has been going in recent years and the amount of knowledge and quality teams out there, it's much harder to win Supercoach with a starting team having picked a ridiculous mid-pricer. You are much better off actually picking cookie cutter now than previously and not having handicaps in your season that you have to spend trades and spend time dealing with at the start. So I think, especially coming on and listening to a show like this, one of the definite bits of advice is our ability to steer you away from those sorts of picks. This is an archetypal trap, I would say. You really don't want to get involved in a pick like that. And I know it feels like we've been saying no to a lot of players this podcast,
which is like the opposite of the Defenders podcast, where we just said yes to everyone.
But yeah, Ben Cunnington is the easiest no we've had so far for this show, I think.
And can I just on that point, Marcus, my midfield is actually at the moment full of players that we discussed on the previous show. And that's probably why there's been no's so far, largely. Also, looked up Torino's stats from the game versus Sydney. Had lazy 30 touches, most on ground for the Giants, 6 tackles, highest fantasy score in the game.
Oh, no. All right. Next player, Jack McRae. 650,000, 12.6% of teams. You're shaking your head already. Do we just draw a line across all of these Western Bulldogs midfielders? Like, you just can't touch them this year.
I think the only one that is probably interesting is Dunkley, and that's because he's available as a forward. But as we discussed on the previous show, just role is so tricky with Dunkley. What is his role going to be? I think that there's just too much risk there. So that means, yep, line goes through absolutely all of them, unless we see some serious injuries. Like, if a couple of them get injured, then all of a sudden they become far more interesting.
McRae, of all the Bulldogs midfielders outside of Dunkley available as a forward, probably makes the most sense. He's more highly picked than Bont and Treloar, who is injured. Bailey Smith, who you'd argue has room to improve as well. Even Smith causes contention. Yeah. I can understand why he's in above 10% of teams. He has been across three, 4-year patch.
Three seasons above 120.
Yeah, he's been basically the best. So I can understand why, but maybe see how Treloar pans out first. And even if Treloar starts injured, like, you're picking him for 22 rounds. So you just don't know what's going to happen post round 10, let's say, even.
And I think that's actually what I was just thinking, is that with these guys, there's going to be some of them that go through a really hot patch. You might get 6 weeks of 150 plus, and McRae can absolutely do that. But in a season where we don't have as many trades as we did last year, you're really holding these guys for 22 a week. So I think that's a really good point that you've just raised. And people might get a bit of FOMO in those 6 weeks where they're going completely nuts, but it's going to be really tricky for them to do it for 22.
All right, next player, Christian Petrarca. 12% of teams, 631,000. Last year, we absolutely loved his selection. Proud to say we touted starting him, and he was a bit of a risk at the start of the season. It seems obvious in hindsight because he had a ripper, but that was one of our better pushed selections, was Christian Petrarca. 81.3 in 2019, moved to an average of 117.5 in 2020. Pick 2 in the 2014 draft, and we've been waiting for this, and it finally has come. And when we thought he'd finally break out, we thought, this is a guy who looks like Dusty Martin, looks like Paddy Dangerfield, has the power, has the goal-kicking prowess, has the skills, and he's delivered. And so, funnily enough, of all the players that we've talked about so far this week, even though you are potentially picking him at a high, still very much considering him, Mark. I don't know if his top end has been fully explored. Tempting.
Yeah, he is. And his price isn't ridiculous. Like, 630 is not crazy. It's not like the high 650s. I think that I'd like to see a bit more from him when the quarters aren't shorter. I think that there's a really good chance that was just the beginning last year, and we actually see him get better and cement himself in that midfield and actually become one of the best players in the comp. Like, he looks like he's on that trajectory. I might want to see a bit more evidence that he's able to back it up. Like, some players do seem to struggle after they have their breakout year. The real elite ones probably don't, like a Dangerfield sort of player. But he could have a great year and still go backwards a little bit because his scoring was just so nuts last year. Yeah, look, he's not a definite no. If you really believe in him, I can understand that and back your own judgment on that one.
He only had 4 scores under 100, a 99, an 89, an 82, and a 53. So even on a consistency front, that was pretty good. They all came in losses as well, which is not necessarily what you want to see, but what you generally will find. Like, the best players, even when the team's losing, they still manage a half-decent score. That 53 against the Swans, he still had 21 touches. So wasn't like he was out of the game. And his upside, he's had 2 games in the 160s last year. Speaks to his potential. And if he can manage a few more of that throughout the year, he might certainly be approaching the Neil mark. So I think he's had a pretty good game in the scratch match. I think I saw that filter through on Twitter. If he has a good preseason game, I'd certainly be very tempted. 25 years old.
Do you think he reaches, like, Dangerfield status? As in, like, is he an absolute lock coming into next season or the year after? Like, just the player that's a cut above and we have to lock him into our teams?
If I pick him, it'd be on that basis. I find it hard to have that same confidence just because Petrarca did seem like he drifted out of games a little bit more than even the Dangerfield Martin types early on in their careers. But some of that was due to the fact that he was playing for Melbourne and they were really struggling for consistency. And even that, I think, is a little bit challenging. If I was confident of Melbourne being a team contending for the 8 very aggressively, then I think you would also have more confidence in where he ends up. But because the competition is so close, I think that he had 117 in a year where, you know, Melbourne, what did they finish in the end? Just looking at the wins and losses, they've won as many games as they lost. just on Melbourne winning more games this year, assuming Petrarca stays the same level of quality, Melbourne has more of the pie, they're scoring more goals, you'd be more confident you'd already be breaking out into that category. So I guess that's probably the other part of it, is that it's harder to pick a all-star premium, especially an already expensive one, from a team that's not winning a lot of games. You're just taking more risk doing that as well. So I think that's probably the other element to it. But yeah, after 2021, we could be going into 2022 going like, this guy's locked in our team for the next 3 years. Like, he's had that talent for a while. I don't know.
I picked him a season early. I try not to do that, but I did pick him 2 years ago based off like 5 minutes of unbelievable play in a preseason game. I was just like, oh, wow, he is ready. And he just wasn't quite there, but he does look like fully elite player that can really break games apart.
All right, next guy, Tom Mitchell, Mark. We've talked about a player returning from LTIs and coming back slowly. ACLs and broken legs, a similar bucket from that point of view. So that was Sam Doherty in the backline show. We got Tom Mitchell in the midfield show. Last year, made my team on the basis that he had potential from his upside. Averaged 119 in 2017, 129 in 2018, winning the Brownlow. And then came back last year only averaging 113, right? Very high standards does Tom Mitchell have. He's still under 28 years old. So recapturing the form is certainly not beyond him. But funny enough, he's in 10.1% of team. So at the 10% cutoff, Mitchell and Petrarca are the last two guys that we're scheduled to talk about. And two of the guys I'm probably the most tempted by in this bracket. I was tempted last year. Really not that upset in the way that he finished. Like 113.5 was still close enough to the top eight. And he's so consistent. He played 22 games, 22 games, 22 games, broke the leg, then 17. What do you reckon, Mark? Am I getting sucked in by the value? Has the game gone beyond little handballs that don't do a heap?
On his breakout season where he got 120 plus, he did become more than just that handball guy. Like, he did start trying to back away from packs and trying to hit those short kicks as well. I think he had shoulder surgery over the summer. I'm really unsure how to read shoulder surgery, because some players seem to really struggle when they come back from that, and some players like Clayton Oliver last year seem fine. So it's really hard to get a read on that one.
Because they can still run during the preseason, right? Put Ks in the legs.
But they just can't do a lot of that contact body work early in the preseason. Is he old enough to be able to deal with that? Like, you'd say yes. Is the broken leg going to affect him for the rest of his career? Well, it has other people, a broken leg. It has ruined their careers, or at least hampered them for the rest of their career. When he got his highest season, it seemed like he was going to do that for the next 4 or 5 years. It seemed like he was the Dane Swan sort of player, just the guy that would just rack up so many touches that he would just be able to post 125 plus averages year after year. I guess it's tricky. He doesn't play in a team that is likely to like finish very high on the ladder this year. You would expect the Hawks might struggle a bit this year. I'm finding it really difficult to get a read on Mitchell. He comes at a bit of a discount.
Apparently he is in doubt for round one. So maybe off that basis, regardless of it being a shoulder, that may be, you know, scary enough. But yeah, he also, to your previous point, seems like a guy who can manage through that and just rack the ball up regardless if he's named round one. He's a Brownlow champ.
He could be the guy at the end of the season that looked super obvious in hindsight, despite these sort of concerns that we're raising now. Given his price, given his scoring history, it might be like, oh God, why didn't we pick him to start with? That was such an obvious discount this year, in a year where a lot of players are overpriced. Yeah, still, he's in consideration for my team. Like you said, he was for yours, but he hasn't made any of the drafts that I've done so far.
Same. I think depending on what comes out on the injury front as we get closer, if he plays one scratch match or manages to sneak into a game next week, but if he's just fit for round one, it'll be unlikely too many people end up taking the risk, even though, yeah, he could still work out as an obvious one. All right, we have one last player that maybe we'll just chuck in there. He's right on the cusp, 9.7% of teams, so why not? We'll finish off with Sam Walsh, 543,000. You said you started off Supercoach 2021 looking at Sam Walsh and putting him into your team. It's weird how quickly we move on to the next shiny thing. And clearly that's Raoul. But when Walsh broke onto the scene, he was a guy who we thought, there's never been potentially a kid like him that's come into the competition this prepared, running machine, averaged 97.7 in his second season. You'd think the only way to go is up for him, potentially even for Carlton as well. Importantly, he finished the season much stronger than he started. So his last few games, absolutely on fire. After a 52 against Hawthorn, he then went 114, 123, 98, 113, 132, 161, 84, 119 to finish off the season. Came home averaging basically 115. Still plays a bit of time on the wing though, Mark, which is a little bit concerning. We don't tend to like that. We want them right in the guts, not dependent on getting a handball out from the guy in the middle. But talent is absolutely there. What do you reckon? 543, a bit too much to pay, or is he one of the guys that we should be considering, like Scott Pendlebury when he came through, or in that Fife when he came through? Just the talent was just so stacked towards success. You don't know where the rocket ship will take you, but you got to buy a ticket.
Look, I think he's actually a really good pick because of the price you're getting him for. I think 543 is a steal for Walsh based on that run home that he had. And even the two games before, the ones you mentioned, were 140 and 115 or something. Like, and it involved a role change as well, where he went more onto the ball in the second half of the year. It's only in his third year. I think that's what I probably need to just keep in mind. Oliver did manage to like post premium numbers in his second year. Even Pendles was only 103 in his third year. Fifey was a bit different. It's really hard to be amongst the elite midfielders in the AFL in your third year. Not many players can do it. Walsh might. I think that, look, the reason why he's not in my team, and this is the only reason at this stage, is that there is no way that I am willing to pick Williams, Cripps, and Walsh in the same team. I'm just not picking three on-ballers from Carlton in the same team. I don't think that's a good strategy. Carlton are not going to win enough games. They can't all average enough. And Doherty's in consideration for my team as well. And I just think that Cripps and Williams come at better prices and have more history to them that indicates that they are good picks. Yeah, I think he's a really good pick, but he's just not in my team, mainly for that reason. I guess, really, the question becomes, Marcus, can you justify picking Rao for 50K cheaper than Walsh into his third year when Rao's played six games?
Yeah, I know. It seems pretty crazy when you state it that way, doesn't it? Yet Rao's won the first locked. So, look, I'm getting second doubts about Rao just because the profile is insane, but it's hard not to get swept up. And there's a certain risk factor about going against the grain as well, isn't there? Right? Like 10% of people pick Walsh. He costs 60K more. So even if he averages 110, okay, that's really not a bigger loss. But if Raul at 460 in above half of the team,
he's 495. So, yeah. But yeah, like keep going with your point because he's in over half of the teams.
And then he works out and you went, nah, I was a naysayer. That's just going to hurt a heck of a lot more. So part of it is a bit, and I don't know how smart it is. I don't think we've ever recommended people picking breakouts based on percentage ownership stats. It actually sounds pretty stupid saying it out loud, but I mean, the FOMO, we're in the age of FOMO, Bitcoin, GameStop.
Hopefully, and that's how you make money.
I don't know. Is that a stupid thing? Help me rationalize this, Mark.
To further to your point, it's all about the memes, right? Like our society really is running on memes these days. And remember the meme of Rao like taking notes into
with the high pants tucked in.
It's so powerful that you have to pick him based on that. Can we meme things into existence? Yes, we can meme things into existence. It's 2021. We've been doing it. Can we meme Rao's Supercoach scores into existence? I'm not sure. Rao is in my team at the moment. Am I confident about it? No. Like you said, though, sometimes with a value pick, going against the crowd can be really tricky because, like, Rao's failure is not going to be that high at that price. If he averages 95 plus, it's not like a super failure, so people aren't going to be really penalized from picking him. If he averages 75, then they are. But yeah, his upside is there. The failure rate's fairly low, and he's got a discount as a price. Not with a lot of confidence he's in my team at the moment. And I think that Walsh will average more than him this year.
I guess that's the thing. It's really hard to discern between pick ones, right? You look at Tim Taranto at 450, and you look at the fact that these guys are both younger and more expensive. And yet I've gone no to Tim in all likelihood. Well, actually, no, I'll probably get tempted to. But whereas Walsh and Raoul as number one picks, with the pedigree that they came in at, the hype, the progress they've shown so far, it's hard to decouple yourself from that. And I'm finding it really hard to do with Raoul off, what was it, 8 Brownlow votes in 3 games or something. I can't remember what it was, or something stupid. And Walsh is fairly similar. Guy has averaged 100 in his second year. The game is changing to suit the younger players. So I think we've talked about it over the last 4 years, that the old guard in the midfield has moved. We've been looking toward young guns to take the mantle in recent years, and they have been. But you're right on the Carlton point, and that's an easy way to help me make that decision. But should that make me think twice about Raoul? Maybe it should.
I'm hitting the same problem. I don't think that we would have ever considered this strongly three guys like Raoul, Taranto, and Walsh all in the same year when none of them have posted premium numbers before. And I don't think it's wise to take three of them into the year. Or is it different this year? Are the old guard all overpriced because they all overperformed in short quarters last year, and we should be looking for more breakouts and value in the midfield this year? And this is the time where we have a new generation of young midfielders coming through. It's quite a drastic change in strategy, not something we've done before. Do you think that this is the year?
Yeah, the only guy that I'm as tempted by who we've talked about so far is Petrarca. And again, it's because you view him as potentially a generational talent if you pick him at that price. You pick him as a guy who could win the Brownlow medal. I wasn't the biggest fan of Oliver as a starting selection based on his inflated scores last year when we went through the initial show. Ditto Steele and his potential. So I've got Cripps as basically the only absolute lock. Neil, do I want to pay that amount for? And basically after that, we're into this category of these young guns. So, yeah, you're right. When I take a step back, and I hate being overpriced, and a lot of the old guys come with injury history, and the Western Bulldogs guys that we could rely on now have all this competition, you end up looking at some of these young guns a little bit more. So we'll have to see how team structures come together, but surprisingly enough, they're all being considered at the moment.
That's a great explanation of it, mate. No, I think you've just summed it up really well. You've outlined the reasons why we've knocked those guys up the top. Yeah, good show, mate. I'm not sure whether I'm totally clear about what exactly I'm doing.
Yeah, but I think we've given ourselves a bit more of a license to search for value in the midfield potentially, especially considering how much we're going to pay up in the back line after last week's show.
I have as many premiums in my back line as I do the midfield in my starting team.
Yeah, hopefully the rookies play along. That's all we can hope for at this stage. All right, and with that, we are going to wrap up. There's still some interesting players that we're going to hit on in the Patreon show. Josh Kelly, Marcus Bontempelli, Jai Simkin. So there's a few interesting guys. Brad Crouch has moved over to St Kilda. What will happen to him? Hugh McCluggage, forgotten, but also an absolute star. So if you're feeling like some bonus content, feeling like supporting the Supercoach show in its 13th year, patreon.com/supercoachcoach. Don't forget, this is on YouTube now if you want to catch us on the tubes. Otherwise, all the best with picking your teams. We've got some footy to watch soon, and we'll catch you all very soon. See ya.
See you, guys.
Jump up, let's get crazy. Jump up, let's get crazy. Let's get crazy.